We're back with more of Lake Effect on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. The last time we spoke with wine contributor Ray Pfister, we talked about the impact that an historically bad wildfire season in California was having on the wine grape industry.
It's been several months since those fires, and we wondered how things were doing today. Ray Pfister is recently back from a trip to Northern California, and he joins us for an update.
Things are actually great. It's amazing how things have come back. I guess the first thing I'd like to say is, unfortunately, because of general media coverage when these fires happen and because there were such severe fires, I think people got the impression that Napa and Sonoma burned to the ground. And they didn't. Yes, some neighborhoods in both areas and American areas around that part of California, Mendocino included, had major fire damage. But to the wineries themselves, only a few wineries burned down. The mountainsides and Atlas Peak and so many other of these areas got major damage, but the wineries have survived. The area is doing very well. The greenery has come back. You really wouldn't even notice it unless you searched it out.
So there wasn't as much damage to the vines themselves as had been feared?
No, what's great about vines, and a lot of people don't realize this, they're a natural firewall. It's a little bit of an amazing thing that these vines in so many areas prevented the fire from going further. Now, wind is the biggest culprit. As was told in many cases, the fire, especially in Sonoma, was jumping Highway 101. I mean, that's a four-lane freeway, which is crazy, but that's the wind that causes it to do that. The vines are a natural firewall and prevented the fires from going so many places and destroying a lot more homes than already were destroyed. If you look at what happened, especially in Fountain Grove and Sonoma, those were neighborhoods, very expensive, beautiful homes, but no vines near there. The fire swept through there so quickly, but many of the wineries were spared because of their vines. It was amazing.
What about smoke damage to the grapes themselves? I know we talked about that last time, that there was some fear that the wines themselves would have sort of a smoky, I don't know if aftertaste is the right word to use, but that it would damage the actual product.
Sure. I mean, the whole point to grapes is they pick up everything from what nature provides it, and if there is fire, there could be something like that. First of all, in Napa, and I believe in Sonoma as well, over 90% of the grapes are already picked. So they were in very good shape overall. There were still a lot of folks out picking. In fact, some guys I knew over on Soda Canyon Road near Atlas Peak got stuck up there, and the CHP had to bring them out by helicopter because there were trees and power lines.
They couldn't get through the fire.
They couldn't get through the road, actually. Yeah. The roads were down. But as far as the smoke taint, there's not been a ton of study into the concept of smoke taint. And right now, UC Davis has gotten many, many samples of grapes from wineries around the area to examine them and do a little bit of a, more of a long-term study on the results of this. But right now, so many of the grapes were already picked that it's not going to be a major problem. Winemakers, though, are testing and tasting and just making sure that what they have is good. And so far, the result has been very good.
So talk a little bit about Premier Napa Valley. You go out every year.
I have been, yeah. I think this was our 8th or 9th. I'm not quite sure. This will be our 10th anniversary of what I do in this business. But Premier Napa Valley funds the Napa Valley Vintners Association. So all that they do, especially in promotion and getting the word out about Napa. And that's one of the big things happening out there because of the fires, because of what people might be perceiving that it's all gone. Well, it's just the opposite. It's there. It's open for business. This is a great time to go out there because tourists have stayed away right now. And believe it or not, they're hurting. And this kind of goes back to this whole concept about labor. There are people who live their lives based on tips or people who are driving cars or whatever it might be. And they're having a hard time making a living right now. It's an expensive place to live. It's an expensive place to work. But tourism is the lifeblood of that area. And you know, they really need to see that come back. And the same goes for Sonoma, too.
Do you think that's going to happen?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I just said the other day, I'm probably stealing a copyrighted line, but to me, that's the happiest place on earth. Yeah. It's just too beautiful. I mean, it's still stunning to go there. I mean, even in wintertime. I did an interview with one guy. We were sitting at the edge of the mountains behind us. It's beautiful. In fact, I wasn't even looking at him half the time. And he said, yeah, this is probably the ugliest time of year.
You bring something up. We're talking about, you know, getting the wines bottled, making sure there's hopefully there's no smoke taint. When you finally, at your house, you have a bottle of wine or maybe a few dozen bottles of wine. I'm not talking about people who have wine cellars and all of that, but how do you store it when you don't have a wine cellar? I am assuming that different kinds of wines require different kinds of storage.
They do. But if you don't mind, I'm going to just backpedal for a second about when you go to places like wine country and when you buy wine, especially in the heat of summer. It's a difficult thing if you're out all day and you're touring wineries. Where do you put that wine? If you can't take it home or back to your hotel, two good suggestions for you. Number one, go to the local grocery store and buy a good old-fashioned styrofoam chest. And you don't even need to get ice. Just throw some frozen food in there or something like that and stick your bottles in that and put it behind the driver's seat, behind the passenger seat, on the floor. The floor is the coolest place in a car to keep your wine when you're in a hot temperature. And that could be anywhere. You could be in Texas. You could be in Georgia. There's wineries
even,
all over the country.
I was going to say summer here, even getting here. Wine from the store back.
From the store, yeah. Or if you're visiting wineries. You go to a winery and you buy six bottles of wine. You don't want to put it in your trunk. That gets hot. It's a tinderbox, basically. But your back seat, you stick your hand in there and you put it in there and you'll feel on a hot day it's actually quite cool there. And, of course, it's always good to cover it up. Don't let any direct sun rays get on it. Back to your original question. Both reds and whites should have a certain degree of chill on them. You know, reds, there are varying opinions. I keep mine at about 56. Of course, I have a chiller. If you don't have a chiller, again, it's the same concept, a dark space, lowest to the floor in any room where there's no actual heat going on. You don't want to store it next to your heater. It's just going to boil. And whites, you know, I put in the fridge. I always, of course, lay them down because you want to keep the corks moist.
That was going to be my question. With so many bottles now that are twist tops and different kinds of, I know they're experimenting with different kinds of sealing things, but if you have a cork, you definitely want to lay it flat.
You have to, otherwise if the cork dries out, you're going to end up cracking it when you open. You don't want that to happen. Obviously, you don't need to lay down anything with a screw cap. You don't have to lay anything down. I don't know if your listeners or if you've seen the glass enclosures. I love these. They're really cool looking. You know, the thing that's been difficult about a screw top is the sound it makes. It's not sexy. But a glass enclosure, it's hard to explain, but it is actually glass, and it takes a little pressure to get it off. It's also good for resealing, but it looks kind of neat, and I like them, and a lot of winemakers have gone to these, especially for whites. So again, something like this, you don't have to store on its side. Even bubbly or champagne, you don't have to store on its side. It's fine vertically because the cork doesn't rely on that contact with the wine itself.
I actually have always heard that you shouldn't store bubbly on its side.
I would not recommend it.
Yeah.
Yes, right.
That anything with sparkle or the CO2 really needs to stand upright because you don't want it to explode.
Exactly. Yeah.
That would be a mess.
Always point it away from you. That's kind of my rule of life. In fact, I used to be a waiter many, many years ago, and I've learned I open my bottles of bubbly always with a towel. Because I want to have control of that cork. Because I have been in those rooms. We've all been in those rooms where somebody gets an eye popped out. You know, you got to be careful.
Yeah, or you put out a window or something like that.
Or exactly.
It's just, it can be ugly. And, right. You know, champagne or anything bubbly should not be around ugliness. It's all about celebration.
Champagne is beautiful and sparkling wine. This is the thing. I'm seeing so many more makers all over, again, not just California, making sparkling wines, and they're great. And slowly but surely, you know, the market has always seemed to gear towards women, but men are starting to wake up towards this because it's a great palate cleanser. And it's just kind of a great general drink. It's not heavy, and it just kind of makes you happy.
I love it. And I like the fact that you can get it a little sweet, you can get it a little tart, you can have it very dry. Just like any other wine, it has the range of tastes.
Sure. Well, just like this trip to Italy I took last year when we were looking at the Asti wines and the Asti Secco, which is a little drier but still sweet, and a range of wines that I'd never really spent time around, and I really grew to appreciate them, let alone Prosecco. You have Spanish bubbling wines, which are amazing, and of course, plenty of American bubbling wines, and then, of course, champagne. It's a great category, and it's growing fast.
So, Ray Pfister, it is great to see you. Are you on travels again, or are you back now for a while?
Actually, in a month, I will be up for the first time in Oregon going to a Pinot Noir barrel auction, which is going to be great. It's going to be Willamette Valley, actually. So it's my first time up there, and I'm really excited about it.
So we will talk when you get back, because I want to hear all about it.
I want to tell you about it, too.
All right, Ray. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Bonnie.
Ray Pfister is co-creator and voice of the wine blog and podcast, Life Between the Vines. Pfister is also the owner and engineer of Fifth Floor Recording Company, and he is our regular wine contributor. You can listen back to all of our segments with Ray at WUWM.com.